As this is a class of meditation, now the steps of meditation are very clear to us. Sit with your back erect, eyes closed, relax the body, watch your breath, chant the mantra. But then what do I do after that? What do I think about? Or do I think about anything at all? And what is the goal of meditation? What is the purpose of meditation? And that very often is not clear to us. At least to me, it was not clear, even though when I started meditation, I used to just sit down and meditate. But then what am I meditating on, or what is the goal or purpose of meditation, was not very clear. People say it is to quieten the mind, or to reduce stress, or reduce blood pressure. You know, those are all the byproducts of meditation. But what is the real goal? What is the real purpose? That is explained very beautifully in this text. Even though some of the ideas seem a little far-fetched, but as we study the text and spend more time thinking about it, and as we start applying these ideas in our meditation, the text will make a lot more meaning for us. It'll make a lot more sense. And we'll find that once you get these ideas, then you have a goal or a purpose or a focus in your meditation, and your spiritual progress will accelerate once you understand any of these texts. There are several in the Upanishads and several texts that are there, but this is one of those fairly advanced texts. So we had done the first two verses, and we started the third verse last week, and it is in the page number 33. Which talks about tattvamasi, that thou art, that consciousness you are, that thou art. So how can I be that consciousness, that Brahman? So that is what we shall try to study, which is the essence of most of the Hindu advanced spiritual texts. So verse number 3.
Yasyaiva sfuranam sadatmakam asat kalpartakam bhasate sakshatatvam asiti vedvachasa yo bodhayatyashritan yat sakshatkaranat bhavet na punara vrittir bhavam bhonidau Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
So it is in page number 33. So he says, it is that consciousness which is also the reality. It is both, and we'll talk about that. So that consciousness, that reality, which even though it is real and permanent, appears temporary, appears unreal. So what is the meaning of real and unreal? We'll talk about it. And then he says that the teacher tells you, you are that. You are that. That's what the teacher tells us. That consciousness. When we think about God, we think about that God. Where that God who is up in the heavens, or who is in Mount Kailash, or who is in Bethlehem or Mecca, or so that God who is somewhere far away, so that's why we don't talk about God as this here. You know, this, I can say this chair or this book or this mic, but I do not say this God because I don't feel a closeness to. So we always say that God, you know, there he's far away somewhere. So he says, the teacher says, that thou art, tattvam asi, you are that. You are not separate from him. Not only it says, doesn't even say that you are part of him, or you are a little bit of him, or you will become him, or you will reach him, or you will realize him, or you will experience him. You know, we all have these ideas. I will realize God, or I will experience God, or I will see him, or I will reach him. They say, no, you are that. You are him. Tattvam asi. It's not that Tattvam bhavishyasi, you will become that. He doesn't even say that. He says, right now, at this moment, you are that. And once the student understands tattvam asi, then what is the result? He says, aham brahmasmi. I am that consciousness. I am that consciousness. But the student has to understand it. Student has to contemplate. Mechanically, I've said you are that. And you say, I am that. Understood. Okay, let's leave. No, it's not that. One has to sit down in meditation and contemplate upon who is that and who is this I. I and that consciousness. What is my relationship to that consciousness? But it does not mean that I am God. See, people misunderstand. A lot of people, when they apply this knowledge and having understood it a little bit, they say, I am that consciousness, the scripture says. So what does that mean? I am God. And then what does that mean? If I am God, then all of you are my followers. You need to worship me. You need to follow me. And that's what we find in the examples of so many misguided teachers like, you know, Koresh and Jones, the one who was in Guyana and asked everybody to drink poison, and that Koresh who was in that fortress. And even in India, we find so many these false prophets who start thinking of themselves as God and everybody else as my followers. And that feeds the ego. So that is not what we mean, and we shall explain that. He says, Sakshat Tattva Masiti Veda Vachasa Yo Bodhayati Ashritan. So one student who approaches the teacher with humility, the teacher explains that you are that. And how? We shall talk about it. And then once the teacher has explained and the student has understood, then he no longer falls back into this delusion. See, right now you and I are in this delusion of this world they describe as an ocean. And we are lost because we really don't know who we are. We don't know what is the purpose of this creation. We don't know who God is. How can I know him? I am such a useless creature. I'm an ordinary person. How can I be that consciousness? But one who has understood, then he no longer gets deluded. It's like you have understood 2 plus 2 is 4. You understood that in kindergarten. Now, whether you are in the 9th grade or whether you are a PhD or whether you are postdoc or whether you are 65 years old, anytime anybody asks you what is 2 plus 2, you will know that it is 4. So no longer you will go into the delusion as what is 2 plus 2. A 3-year-old may not know that. But once having studied, then it becomes very clear. So similarly, once that student has understood this, and this particular verse, once you have understood and applied that, then you no longer are deluded. You're no longer lost. And that's why he says, I prostrate to that teacher who has given me this knowledge. And he says that teacher is not only a teacher, but in my eyes, he is nothing but as the same as God. Because one who gives this highest knowledge has the same degree of respect. So that thou art, how am I to experience that? So let us go back to what we had studied a few weeks ago about how the world was created. Let's go back a little bit and revise that, because I think one needs to know how this world was created to understand what is the creator. So how is the world created? So there are many methods. So now when something is created in this world, something is created. Now how is it created? It can be a whole and a part. Like the sun was there, which was the whole sun, and a part of that came up out and became the 9 planets. Earth, you know, Mars, Mercury and all. So the sun became smaller. So the sun became smaller and 9 planets came out of it. Now, can the world be created like that, that God was full and then part of him broke off and became this universe? And so God became smaller now. Now, instead of full God, he was a 3/4 God. We can't say that. So that is not correct. Okay, can it be like a seed and a plant? You know, like a seed was there and a plant came out and made a tree, but the seed died. The seed no longer exists. So was it that God was the seed and from him came this world and then God is now dead and only this world exists? We know he's not dead. Then we say, okay, was it created like gold and ornaments? You know, gold, you take a piece of gold and you modify it, you change it, and you make different ornaments of different shapes, sizes, names, colors. So now the gold is no longer recognized and you see all these ornaments. So is that the way that God was there and he became modified and changed into this world? Then again, God, one of his essential qualities is avyayam. He is immutable, unchangeable. So that is not valid. How about transformation or like combining, like to make this building, you have bricks and mortar and cement and wood and steel. So you take all of them and transform them, make them into the world. Is it that we took different parts of God? No, it can't be. He cannot be parted. He cannot be split. He cannot be broken up. So it's not that God was broken into many pieces. How about mother and child? You know, like a mother is there, the child is born. And so the mother is there and the child is there. And they are both complete. They are both fine. But that cannot be, even some places the God is described as a mother and father of the universe. You know, even in the Bible is say he's the father, or some Hindu scriptures say he's the mother or she is the mother of the universe. But then if the mother and child cannot be in the same place, like mother may be cooking in the kitchen and the child is playing in his room among the toys. So if God was there like the mother and the universe came from him, then God is sitting somewhere separate and the universe is away from him, and God and the universe cannot be in the same place, like mother and child cannot occupy the same spot. So that's not valid either, because we know that God is everywhere. There is no place where he's not. He's in every cell. He's in every part of this microphone, of this floor, of every cell of my body is illumined by. So if none of these five methods of, you cannot think of any other method of creation. Anything that is new or created has to have these five methods. So we say if none of the five are valid and God is everywhere, but you don't see him, why? Because the world is an appearance, is an abhas. God is there, but I don't see him because I have superimposed the world upon him. I have superimposed the reality. I have given reality to this world and superimposed it upon, even though he is everywhere, I don't see him. But a wise person, a Mahatma, a prophet, can see the Lord in everything. He can see it in all the objects. He can see it in all the humans, all the plants, all the animals. Why? He or she has experienced the Lord in his own heart, as his own life or consciousness. And once you experience him within as the life principle, as the consciousness, then you see the Lord everywhere. And then for such a person, it becomes very clear that this world is just an appearance. It's just a movie, like in a movie screen, there is a movie running. But you and I get caught up in the movie and say, oh my God, the heroine is suffering and the poor hero is going to go save her. But the one who is projecting the movie, he knows, you know, I'm just projecting this movie and these people are crying for nothing. You know, in the end of the movie, the hero is going to save the heroine and the villain is going to go to jail. So he knows all that. But you and I, not knowing the outcome, we get so caught up in this movie. So a wise person knows that this world is an abhas. It is an appearance. It is a superimposition. And what is the relation between the world and God? They call it like the snake and the rope, or the ghost and the post. And the snake and the rope example we have talked about before, but we will briefly go through that. The rope is lying on the ground and you happen to walk by. It is dark. You don't see the rope. You just see the little outline and you imagine a snake on it. And then when your foot hits that, you get scared. Oh my God, I have been bitten by the snake, and you get shocked. So there is no snake. There is only a rope. But not seeing the rope as a rope, you superimpose a snake, until a wise person comes and tells you there is no snake, it is a rope, shows you the flashlight, and then you say, oh my God, I was scared for nothing. But until I knew that, I was imagining a snake and I had been bitten by the snake, and some people even faint and pass out. So even though this whole world is nothing but that one consciousness, the one divinity, we project the differences. And that's what we say, that this whole world is a snake. Not seeing the rope, we project the snake upon it. And then we have all the problems. This is my friend, this is my enemy, I like this person, I don't like. And all the sufferings and problems come when I don't see that one divinity and project differences upon that. And also the post and the ghost is a similar example where Swami Chinmayananda in his commentary talks about a post, that there is a wooden post in the distance, and as you are walking, you're not sure, there is a shadow and you think there may be a ghost, you know, you happen to believe in ghosts. And then you say, there is a ghost and he will bite me. And so it's the same story, the same example. Not seeing the post as a post, you project ghost upon it. So now the next point is, who is this God and how does he create this world? There is this total consciousness, what we call as Om, the total consciousness. In me, when it is projected in me, I become the individuality. I become the BMI, the body, mind and intellect. I perceive, feel and think. And what do I see? The objects, emotions and thoughts. Perceive the objects, I feel the emotions, I think the thoughts. So this total consciousness, which is Brahman, which is God, which is the substratum of this whole universe, when it projects in the individual mind, it becomes the individual creature, you and me. Why? Because there is only one consciousness. It's not that there are multiple consciousnesses, her consciousness and his and mine and yours. There is only one consciousness, and the consciousness, when projected or identified with an individual mind, becomes the individual being. When projected with the total mind, the mind of all the creatures, all the humans, all the animals, all the birds, all the plants, all the fish, the total mind, when is illumined by that consciousness, it becomes the creator or God. So, what is the difference between me and God? The consciousness is the one and the same. The illumining factor is one and the same. But that illumining factor, when it identifies with the limited individuality, me, it creates my own little world. I have my own little world where I'm a physician, I'm a male, I'm a resident of Bakersfield, I do this, I do that, whatever. So I create my own little world, but I cannot create, say if I want to create an elephant, I cannot create an elephant, I cannot even create a little plant. All I can create is confusion and sorrow. That is the only thing that an individual can create, is confusion. But the consciousness, when it identifies with the total mind, becomes the creator of the whole universe. And so the universe is created and under the control of God or the creator, who then sustains and supports this universe. But the substratum, the consciousness, is the same. And again, in this particular, it is very important to understand that consciousness is not in me. See, people misunderstand. They say, I am this human, and there is a consciousness in me because of which I am able to walk, talk. No. Consciousness is an ocean. Everybody is floating in that one ocean of consciousness. So I am in this ocean of consciousness, and the consciousness is reflected in this mind and intellect, which is the subtle body. See, we have a gross body that you and I can see, but then we have a subtle body called the mind and the intellect, and the consciousness, when projected in this mind and intellect, gives life. And that's why I'm able to talk. Just as there is a mirror outside the window and the sunlight is reflected in the mirror. Now, when the sunlight is reflected in the mirror reflects the light into the room and the room gets lit up. But the mirror has to understand that the light is not mine. But what the mirror starts saying, I am illumining this room. I am so powerful. And that is the mistake you and I make. We borrow our illumination from the consciousness, our ability to walk, talk, think. But then we start getting this ego that I am the doer. I have done so much. I am so smart. I am so intelligent. I am so rich. I am so successful. I am so powerful. I am the president of the United States. I am the governor of the state of California. I am the senator. I am the congressman. I am the president and the CEO of this company, or I am the teacher, or I. All this ego we get because we forget. Because we are like that mirror, you know, who just is reflecting the sunlight into the room. But when the mirror starts thinking that I am illumining the room, that's when the problem arises. So we are floating in this ocean of consciousness. In fact, we are that consciousness. There is nothing except that consciousness. It is that consciousness that gives life to all beings. All beings, whether they are plants, animals, birds, fish. And there is only one consciousness. There is only one consciousness that we call as God, or that we call. Then why are there so many forms? You know, why is there Jesus on the cross and Buddha sitting in meditation and Shiva and then Krishna playing the flute and Vaheguru and all these different forms? Because it is very difficult for me to contemplate upon the formless. Because this consciousness or God has to be formless. The moment you give it a form, you say, oh, it is only a Jesus. Then you are limiting him. That it can only be in the form of Jesus. It cannot be in the form of Krishna. Those are all false prophets. They are all false gods. And they need to be destroyed. And that's what the problem with the religions is. Or same way in Hinduism, we say, Krishna alone is real. You know, all these other Shiva and Saraswati and all, they're all secondary. Or, you know, for a Muslim or a Buddhist, and that is the problem in this world. This reminds me of a little story. There was this very ardent fundamentalist Christian, you know, who all the time propagated about Christianity and put down every other religion, very fundamentalist. And one day he was parking his car and he had only one quarter. He had to put it in the meter to park the car for an hour. And it so happened the quarter slipped from his hand and fell on the ground. And there was a lot of muck and water there. You know, it had rained like it had rained today. And it's a lot of muck and very dirty. And now he had no quarter. He had to park the car. So he started searching, you know, for the quarter, putting his hand in the dirty mud and trying to shake it and find his quarter. And he kept saying, Allah, please find the quarter. Allah, please help me find the quarter. Allah, Allah. So one of his friends passed by. He says, Brother Bob, you know, you are a preacher in our church and you tell us about God and you tell us all the other religions are to be not worshipped. And you are asking Allah to find the quarter? Why are you saying the name of Allah? He says, you know what? Just for a miserable little quarter, I'm not going to let Jesus go in there to get it for me. Let Allah go. I don't want my beloved Jesus to be inside there, you know, in this muck. So not having understood that there is only one consciousness, we focus that only my form of God is real. And that is where the whole problem arises. But then how can I and that consciousness be one? How can I and that consciousness, tattvamasi? So they describe God as having three qualities. Sat, which is existence. Chit, which is consciousness. And anand, which is bliss. Chit we already talked about. The consciousness that illumines everything. That gives life to everything. And anand is the bliss. You know, when you are in that presence of the Lord, or when you are in meditation or prayer, you experience joy. But today I want to talk about sat, or is, or existence. We say everything is. Chair is. Building is. Fan is. She is. He is. I is, you is, that's wrong English, but you can say I am or you are, but the thing is everybody exists. This chair is, you know, the chair exists. It doesn't have life, it doesn't have consciousness, but it has existence. Everything, even the rock, even the floor, everything is, everything exists. Now, what is the substratum that gives isness? What is the isness? Isness. What is that gives? So they say that everything has three properties: name, form, and existence. So like now we have this, what do you call it? Chair. It has a name. Now in Hindi you can call it kursi. In Spanish you can call it silla. In Telugu or Kannada or Malayalam or French, you may give it different names, Russian. But we all know it is a chair, so it has a name, it has a form, it has a shape, and it exists. Same way you and I, okay, she's a woman, and so that is the name, that is the shape, and then there is a name that the parents gave. So she has a name, she has a form, and she exists. I have a name, I have a form, and I exist. So the names and forms may vary, but the existence is only one, and the existence cannot be destroyed. And that existence is who I really am. Like to give an example. Now there is a tree, right? So you say tree is. Tree exists. It was a tree that is growing. And so tree has a name. Tree, it has a form, shape, and it exists. So tree is. Then what do? You cut down the tree. And you make planks. So you say planks is. Right? Or planks are, of course, it's not the wrong English, but the plank is. So tree is, and now plank is. So you took the plank, and the existence is still there. You have not destroyed the existence. You have changed the name and form. Then you take the plank, and you make it into a beautiful table. So what you have done, tree is, plank is, table is. So now you use the table, you eat and drink on it, you serve dinner and all that. After a while, the table gets old and it's broken and rickety and all. So you say, I want to get rid of this table. So you call a carpenter and he chops up into wood, different small pieces of wood, firewood. So and then he makes you a new table. So what happens? Tree is, planks is, table is, now firewood is. Now that tree became into the firewood. But the isness did not change. You did not destroy the substance of the tree. Then you take the firewood and burn it in the fire. Now, did you destroy the wood? You destroyed the wood, but you did not destroy the isness. That's why there is a famous line that says that when a candle is burnt, nothing is destroyed. Everything remains the same because matter cannot be destroyed. That is the fundamental principle of physics, that matter cannot be destroyed. Matter can be changed but cannot be destroyed. So we burnt that firewood in the fire and now we are left with ashes. So we say ashes is. So tree is, planks is, table is, firewood is, ashes is. Then you take those ashes and put them on the ground in the field and they become fertilizer. So on that field, now you grow zucchini. So zucchini is. So it is that same existence which now. So in this whole process, the existence, which is the permanent substratum of this whole universe, does not change, cannot be destroyed. The name and forms can be changed. And that is what I have to understand in my meditation and also as I function, as I walk and talk in the life, that I understand that I am that existence, that Sat, that consciousness. And the existence and the consciousness are not two separate. It's not that God is existence and God is consciousness and God is bliss. or there are three gods, one is blissful and one is conscious and one is existing. No, all three are descriptions of that one. That one God, that one substratum, that one support, that one consciousness, who is formless, who is everywhere existing as existence. And everything in this universe is nothing but an appearance, name and form. And that's why I have to tell myself constantly, I am name, I am form, and I am existence. So that existence, that consciousness, which is all-pervading, is that same consciousness that is me. And that existence, which is existing everywhere, is me. Me and that consciousness are not separate. The moment you say that God and I are separate, then God is somewhere and I am somewhere. That's the fundamental flaw in Dvaita, in the duality. Most of the world religions talk about God and me as separate. And for a spiritual seeker who starts out on the journey, it is normal to say, okay, God is all powerful, all loving, all compassionate, all wonderful, all sweet, all nice. And I am this miserable creature who is suffering on this earth, and I am limited, and I cannot do anything, and I depend on God, and I am thankful to Him, and I am grateful to Him, and I worship Him, and I pray to Him. Very nice. You know, that is good. You start out by that, that there is a God who is in heaven, who has created me, who has created this world, and I love Him. And I'm grateful to Him for everything He has given me. And that's what the essence of prayer is. You know, you go to church or temple and you say, oh Lord, thank You for all the life You have given me, all the love and compassion and kindness. That's very good. But your spiritual journey is incomplete until as long as you think of Him as separate. As He is somebody somewhere else and I am here. So that's why the teacher said, Tat Tvam Asi. You are that. You are not separate from Him. And that's what you have to understand. I am that consciousness who at this moment I am occupying this body. And even when this body gets old and dies, nothing happens to me. I do not die because I am deathless. I was never actually born. Actually, I was never born. This individuality called Anil or Mita or Jayashree, yes, took, you know, appeared on this earth and took this name and form that was given by my parents. I was born from my parents and I am living in this world. But even when this body dies, even when I am buried or cremated or whatever is done to me, as the consciousness, I am ever living, just as a mud can be made into a mud pot. And you, in that mud pot, which is beautiful, colorful, very pretty, you don't see that brown mud, you know, that formless, dirty mud. Ah, this beautiful pot, you know, made in China with all this glass and all gold and all this beautiful. But then when it breaks, that mud pot, what happens? It becomes one with that mud. So the pot may be born or created or died, but nothing happens to that mud which was ever present. So that understanding I should apply in my life, that I am Aham Brahmasmi. I am that consciousness that is, and that is not far away from me. Tattvamasi, that thou art, you are that. Not that you will become that, or you will reach that, or you will realize that, or you will see that, or you will experience that, or you will meet that. You know, that is all the way. You know, we say, when I realize the truth, I will see God standing in front of me. You know, He will be smiling and I will, you know, fall at His feet. But that is all with the idea that God and I are separate. But one has to constantly live with the idea that if God is everywhere, then He is in me. That's why in our Hindus they say, Kan Kan Me Bhagwan. Every cell of your body is illumined by that one consciousness. none of the cells of, you know, the human body multiplies, and every 7 years, they say every cell in your body changes. All your brain cells, your bone cells, your kidneys, your liver, your spleen, your heart, your lungs, your feet, hands. Every cell changes every 7 years. So at the end of 7 years, you are a totally new human being, and none of you, the cells that you had 7 years ago, you have right now. And so if you have lived for 70 years, you have 10 lifetimes, 10 times all your cells have been recycled, have been changed. So every cell that is multiplying, that is functioning, it is because of the presence of that consciousness. And I exist. I am existence. Who at this moment is occupying this place, this name and form? So understanding that is what we apply in our meditation, and what you have to apply constantly. And once such a person understands that, then how does it change their life? As in the third line it says, yat sakshat karnat bhavetna punaravrittir bhavam bhav nidau. That we'll talk next time. How does this person's life change who has experienced this truth? Not only right now I am speaking it, you are hearing it, I also have read it in this book. None of us has that experience that I am that consciousness. I definitely don't. Maybe you do. So it is an intellectual understanding. At least we have heard that from the teacher. At least we have heard from Shankaracharya Bhagavan or Swami Chinmayananda that you are that consciousness. But now we have to go and apply that in our life, in our dealings with people, in our functioning in the world. Then only that knowledge becomes permanent. So how do we apply? We'll talk about next week.
So the world as we know it is still matter. So I was wondering how an illusion.
What we mean is that the name and form is an illusion. The name and form is something we superimpose, but the existence is the truth, like mud. Mud exists. Now it may exist as a pot. So the pot is the name and form, but the substratum of the mud remains unchanged. So similarly, the one that lends its existence to that world is called Sat, is called that consciousness, that substratum. The name and form is what we superimpose upon it. And in fact, the only thing that is real is that which cannot be negated. You know, we ask about what is the difference between real and unreal. So they say God alone is real and the world is unreal. That's what is said. So what do we mean by world is unreal? I can feel the mic, I can feel the chair, I can feel the book. Then how can I say these are unreal? So they say what is unreal in our Upanishads is that which is not there in all periods of time and in all states of consciousness. That which was in the past, is in the present, and will remain in the future unchanged is real. That which is changing, which is appearing for a while and then disappearing, is unreal. Also, that which is there in all three states of consciousness and cannot be negated is real. But that which can be negated in certain fields of consciousness is unreal. Like this chair was not there 10 years ago and it is there today. And then 10 years from now, it may not be there. The chair is old. I may get a new chair. That which was there in the past is there in the present and will always be in the future, which you can call as God or consciousness or Sat, is real, but everything else is an appearance, is a temporary presentation, a temporary manifestation of that existence as a chair. And so we call a chair, but in reality, the chair has no existence of its own. It is borrowing existence from that.
So the chair always was matter.
Yes. Actually, even matter is not real. If you think about it, you know, we think that matter is real, right? But physics says, but actually, if you think about it, matter is not real. Because what is a rock? A rock is nothing but molecules. And molecules are what? Nothing but atoms. And what is an atom? Atom is a neutron and the proton in the middle with electrons circling and a lot of space and energy. And actually, even a rock has no substance. It is only energy that is appearing as a rock. So we are giving existence to the rock or to the chair, but in fact, it is nothing but matter and energy playing around. But underneath all is that one substratum, and that is what one has to focus on. That is the support of this whole universe. The matter, which is the support, and the energy, both are appearances upon that one consciousness, which is beyond matter and beyond energy. See, for physicists, they still give importance to the matter and to the energy, but that support, which is called Sat, and that consciousness, which is called Atman, are even beyond matter and energy, but they are the support of everything. And that permanent existence I am not this name and form. So this name and form is again has no true reality, even though we say that matter cannot be destroyed. But it is the existence which is not destroyed. The matter just gets changed and appears and disappears like that wood, like that tree. All of us are nothing but bundles of energy put together where we look like a human being. Actually, there is no matter in you or me. There is no matter. First of all, 75-80% is water. But even that so-called water is nothing but energy. Every cell of mine is nothing but energy. So really, there is no matter. There is no existence of the so-called matter. But there is a substratum or a support which is holding this whole universe together. And that is who I am. It does not mean that a realized master doesn't see a chair as a chair and doesn't say, oh, this is a table and starts eating on it. No, he will see a chair and sit on a chair. He will see a table and eat on the table. He will see a car and drive it. But he understands that all of these are nothing but supported by that one consciousness. They are only a superimposition. They are only a temporary name and form that we have given, calling it a car or a chair or a table, but and including me, I am also, then he does not even give too much importance to himself. Because nothing, because it is this ego, this perceiver, feeler and thinker that separates my body, mind and intellect from others' bodies, minds and intellects and gives reality to this world. But a wise person does not. And then he lives in eternal bliss, eternal joy.
It changes, though. I agree with that, that the form changes from, when it's burnt, it becomes something else. So, the matter's still there, so it's substance. It's something there.
True. Right. But physicists will tell you matter is not real, it is only energy. If you really study quantum physics, everything is energy. Even that rock is all just a bundle of energy. So, in fact, has no reality. Quantum physics is coming very close to what Vedanta, the teachers, told us 8,000-10,000 years ago. Quantum physics is reaching the same conclusions.
But there's still something there, right?
It's only energy. It is just a...
Energy is something.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is just a fluffy matter. And the quantum physicists talk about that one consciousness, and then they talk about the subatomic particles that are emerged, and then the subatomic particles appear as the atomic particles, and atomic particles appear as this world of name and form. But underneath, there are only atomic particles, like electrons, protons, neutrons. And underneath the electrons, protons, and neutrons are the subatomic, called quarks and subprotons and all that, and they actually has no reality. There is nothing. It is just an illusion. To think that this chair is a solid substance is an illusion of our mind. So there, in end, what is that which is holding all this together? That is that. That is who I really am. And that is permanent. Everything else is changing. Everything else is just a fluffy appearance. It's just like a movie, has no reality. It is just energy. Again, even that energy is again a term that we are giving. But in reality, there is no reality in this world. There is no such thing as matter. E equals mc squared. Einstein had proved that E equals m. So what is energy? Mass multiplied by the speed of light squared. C was the speed of light. So matter is nothing but energy. It is interchangeable. Energy is appearing as matter. So energy, if at all, is the closer to the truth than matter is. Matter is still not closest to the truth.
Right.
Energy, if at all, you can say is a little bit closer to that truth. If you say it is energy. But even that, energy is still a concept of my mind. They say that the Lord or the Creator or the consciousness cannot be described in words, cannot be experienced by the mind, cannot be thought of by the intellect, cannot be seen by the eyes, cannot be touched by the hands. Even whatever I am speaking is nowhere near describing that truth. Even though we are speaking from this book, which is supposed to be an advanced book, but still is not anywhere approaching the truth, whether it's the Bible or the Quran or the Gita or the Guru Granth Sahib. None of them, human words are incapable of describing that truth. We can just try, but it is like a child who is talking, you know, like a three-year-old girl is talking about the joys of marriage, you know, or the joys of motherhood, how wonderful it would be to be a mother. And you will laugh. You'll say you're a three-year-old girl. How would you know what are the joys of motherhood? So similarly, you and I are talking about that consciousness when we don't know anything about it. We are at that level of the three-year-old girl.